You're on the air with Florenza, your podcast destination for authentic conversations with a twist. So grab your favorite drink, get comfy, and join me on this unique literary journey. Cheers! Lisa Dotson is not only a national best-selling author, but also an Amazon number one best-selling author with a remarkable portfolio of over 19 novels. Her extensive body of work covers a wide range of genres, from multicultural to contemporary, romantic suspense to sweet romance and clean read. Lisa, a hybrid author, has her novels published with both Harlequin and Kensington publishing houses, as well as independently under her imprint. She strives to create positive and relatable characters that readers can connect with. Welcome to the stage, Lisa Dotson. Lisa.
Thank you for having me, Florenza. It's great to see you.
Yes. Now, did I get all that going as far as that bio? Because
you did that thing. Yes, you did it. You got it. You got everything.
So I know, in addition to your authorship, that you also functioned as a publicist. You also had a radio talk show that you did, and you're very, very involved in the literary community. I know one of the things that you're passionate about is ensuring that authors understand marketing, that they understand the importance of editing. So of all of that, what's your favorite thing to do in terms of assisting authors?
My favorite thing to do, I'd have to say it is definitely publicity. Content editing is up there as well. I love reading the stories and just being able to, not just the grammatical aspect of it, because, you know, I'm not big into that type of editing, but more like, how is the character coming across to the reader? Is it believable? Is there enough emotion in the conversations that they're having, that sort of thing. So more like character development. Wonderful. And so I think I love that the most.
Now, do you feel that your love for character development is what drew you to the romantic and the romantic suspense, to those genres? Because those are very heavy with the character development.
I have loved romance since, who knows, probably like middle school or something. I have always wanted to be a writer. And then more like in the teen years, you know, where the angst and all that comes in, I always wanted to be a romance author. And oddly enough, I said back when I was a teenager and started reading Harlequin romance novels, I was like, I want to write for Harlequin. That's what I want to do. And tell me why, girl. It was like not even just recently, a couple years ago, where I just all of a sudden it just popped into my head. You are writing for Harlequin. Like I had forgotten that somehow. And I was like, oh, yes.
I do that.
My dream did come true years and years later, but that's okay. I can say, yes, I am writing for Harlequin. That's what I said I wanted to do. And that's what I did. So, yeah, I enjoy the romance. I enjoy Happily Ever After. I'm about as sappy as they get, girl. I'm like your little crying in a corner on Christmas watching the Hallmark movies and whatnot. So, yeah, it's a whole thing.
You know, so for those who know me know that in its truest form, romance is my least favorite genre. And it's not that I'm not romantic. Mm-hmm. I am not. I say that I'm not the Massengill commercial. I'm more the Trojan commercial.
Somehow that's not surprising. Okay.
I am for sure. This is supposed to be clean romance. I just bombed that. We're going to have to put not.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Because I didn't, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. I didn't start out writing clean romance. I started, you know, putting a little heat on the, spend a little heat on that thing like everybody else. And years ago when I wrote for Harlequin Kamani Line, they were like, hey, we need some sex scenes. And I'm like, okay, so I know my way around some sex scenes. It's just that as I got older and I started, you know, like going to church more, being getting a little more spiritual and whatnot, I'm like, well,
we can't be doing this.
Well, you know, it's like, I don't really need it. And then it became a challenge because it was like, even when I had the sex scenes, I always in the back of my head, my gauge was, and if my mom ever picked up a book, I would want her to be able to continue reading it without going, oh, girl. So that was my gauge, even when I was writing the sex scenes and whatnot and putting heat on it. So now the challenge is still finding a way to convey that romance, that heat, the intimacy, but just, you know, leave you at the bedroom door. So
I love that.
Love it.
And I think you were the first author that I met personally that did that so beautifully. I just feel like with your writing that you show us all the pre-funk, everything that's going to go on before. And then you just kind of give the little finger, they come a little closer, and then you slam the door in our face and say, grown folks only on this side.
Right. And then the next morning, everybody's like,
everybody wakes up with bed head.
Everybody's in a good mood, breath, ready to eat a whole stack of pancakes.
And you know, I love that because right now, as far as in the indie space, a lot of what you're hearing that is like selling off the shelves and the books that get that cult following are those books that do follow the thug love genre, that do follow, you know, the street lit. And for individuals that love that, listen, I applaud anything that has people reading, right? If you have a book in your hand and you are reading and you're getting lost in those pages, and there's an author somewhere that is grinning from ear to ear. And so, you know, when we hear so much about that, it becomes those who, you know, want their moms to be able to read their books. Now, you know, I had to use a pen name because my mom and my pastor both know I write, and I just told them, you don't go there. When you see Aiken Ponder,
I will not be held responsible. I already gave y'all a disclaimer. Don't be looking at me sideways. If you happen to stumble across and go, oh, I want to read, see what Aiken Ponder's read. That ain't for you. That ain't for you.
Not for you. But it was difficult. I'm not going to lie. My vocabulary is my daughter says that I beautifully, what she calls it, accessorize. I accessorize the English language with colorful words.
Right.
But the first time that I actually penned anything like really spicy on a page, it was not an easy feat.
It's right? not easy. It is not easy. And I mean, to me, it is more difficult to me to write scenes where they got some heat to them and now you need words for things, and it's like, because you can't keep using the same words over and over again because you got 300 something pages worth of dialogue to get in, and now it's like, okay, where's that thesaurus again? It's like, I need another word for this body part, or I need another. And to me, that's a challenge. And to me, that makes you, you know, way honed your skills as a writer, to be able to say what you need to say in different ways every single time.
Yes. So that is,
I think that takes some skill. Right.
Absolutely. And so I think it becomes beautiful. How much can you imply without actually showing, but yet and still let the reader know that the deeds were done? And that takes skill, because it's easy to, you know, talk about.
Yeah, it's easy to say, you know, right. It's easy to say a blue bell, but then when you're like a bell that's maybe, you know, a little on the azul side, or it is now a aquamarine, or you know, there's just, you know, you got to get in there and just come up with stuff. And I think that's what makes authors that really test their mettle and makes them a great writer.
Yes. Now, speaking of great writing, I've already listed some of the genres that you write in. And what I love, and I have to look over here because I read it, some of the words that define your writing. Now, we've already established clean romance and the stuff your mom and your pastor can read. But these were three words that when I looked up Lisa Dotson, I found danger, passion, and drama.
You know, I can't even claim those, because those are Harlequin's taglines, but it fits. Hey, that is their romantic suspense line: danger, passion, drama. Now, what the tagline I came up with, and it's pretty much the same thing, is where danger meets romance, because that's where I love to live. That's where you see me just hanging out, just floating with, you know, on my back, floating in danger and romance.
It's the
just
corner of danger and romance.
The corner of danger and romance.
Walgreens should have pinned that one.
See, we giving them all sorts of little nuggets tonight. They sleeping on it. They sleeping on it.
Now, your newest release is The Bodyguard Deadly Mission. Now, is this a part of a series? Because I was looking, I know that you love series. Is this a book in a series? And if so, which series is it a part of?
So it's not in a series per se, but the first book I wrote for Harlequin and Romantic Suspense was 6 Days to Live. And that came out last year. So 6 Days to Live, girl, that was 6 Days to Live. So it was fast. It was furious. It had a lot of just go, 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 go. And so some of the characters from 6 Days to Live are mentioned in The Bodyguard's Deadly Mission, because Alexa King is actually friends with Marina Dash. And so Marina Dash actually does a lot of the tech that Alexa King uses in her business. And so it's not necessarily a series. They're standalone. You can read them in any order, but it's just, I like dragging my characters from one book to the next, just because it's fun. And sometimes, yes, I don't want to say goodbye to those characters just yet. So I try to like come up with ways to put them in another book. But I had a really good time writing the two for Harlequin Romantic Suspense. And it's seriously tested my mettle, because I've had to, you know, I don't like research. I do not like research at all. Anybody knows me knows I'm lazy. I don't like research. But I had to research the color off of these books.
Yeah.
Because Marina is a scientist. And so I had to know about chemistry. I had to know about nursing, because, you know, Coulter had a biotoxin he was injected with and had 6 days to live unless she found an antidote. So I had her having to reverse engineer an antidote, and I had to know about bio 3-level containment, you know, labs and all sorts of stuff. You know, you go down a rabbit hole and it's just like, wow. And the same thing for Alexa. I had to know about tactical stuff, because she's a bodyguard. She's a close protection officer. So I had to know about how she needs to fight, how she needs to move. What is she going to get trained in? You know, now we're driving cars very fast. What happens if the tire blows? It's like all sorts of stuff. So labor of love for sure. But I just love incorporating suspenseful elements into my novels.
Do you feel that the work that you put in, just with what you said, and for those that are only listening, like, I was leaning in, and if you're privileged to see the video of this, then you saw that lean in. When authors talk about the struggle with breaking into the traditional publishing arena, right? And being on both sides, you're privy to the discussion that goes on stage and behind stage. And when authors are talking about, you know, they're passionate about their characters, they're passionate about their story, but perhaps they simply wrote the story as they interpreted it and didn't do that background. They didn't do the research. They didn't step outside of the characters that as they were presented to them to learn about what their job is, as if they're training for it themselves. Like as you were speaking, it was like you were training to be a scientist. You were training to be a bodyguard. You were training to be a tech person. Do you feel that that's one of the hindrances for some authors in terms of being able to break through into the traditional publishing realm?
So what I can say is, I mean, I've done both. I've done the hybrid author thing where you're published traditionally and then you also do independent publishing. And so I got my first break and novel through a traditional publisher. So there are, you know, every line has expectations. Every line has criteria that you need to follow in order to be in that line. And so I had a formula that I had to stick with when I was writing. Well, first I was writing for Kamani, and that's a whole different type of formula than Harlequin Romantic Suspense. So Harlequin Romantic Suspense, you know there's going to be an element of danger. You know there's going to be, you know, guns a-blazing and all sorts of stuff. And then I actually, you know, got to do some detective work because there's got to be a bad guy. And then I have to know, you know, what happens in the story and be able to kind of continue that on. So I think what makes it a good read for, and it's up to the author, it's like, it's part of your job description to be able to write a story that is, to me, engaging and makes it hard for the reader to want to put down. The worst thing that can happen to an author is a reader that did not finish their book for whatever fill in the blank reasons. I didn't like it because it was this or it was that. It was too this. It was not enough of that. And that's like not something you want to hear as an author. You want to hear, girl, I lost sleep because I could not put your book down. I dragged your book with me on vacation because I couldn't wait to see who done it. Those are things that authors really love to hear. And it makes all of the hours and hours and hours of research and development and trying to get the dialogue and coming up with those nice words to explain the same thing over and over again. It makes it all worthwhile. But I think that as an author, if you want to have staying power, you have to put in that work on the back end, because that's what makes it a memorable story. That's what makes it believable. That's what makes your characters come to life, because now you're writing three-dimensional characters as opposed to just two-dimensional, and give them background, give them, you know, I have a character sheet I fill out for my characters. So I know what religion they are. I know how tall they are. I know what color their eyes are. I know how much they weigh. I know who's allergic to what. What do they do when they're bored? What do they do when they're happy? What's their favorite ice cream? So it helps me to develop a character that readers can root for and they fall in love with, and they're yelling at them when they're not doing what they want them to do, that type of thing. And that's what I think makes a great story and makes, you know, an author really be able to, you know, stand the test of time.
And when that character is real to you as the creator, then they're automatically going to be real to the reader. And I love that you said that you put in those things that are as inconsequential as what their favorite ice cream is. Because if you have that scene and they're at the cafe and they're ordering ice cream and you didn't solidify that their favorite is this, and then later it pops up, you know, like you give them, I don't know, butter pecan, but then later you put they're allergic to nuts, but here it is that they're eating butter pecan, your reader is going to be like, wait a minute.
Exactly. And don't think a reader won't seek you out and go, oh, on page 52, won't you had her eating butter pecan ice cream, But then on page 265, she's in the hospital because she got a nut allergy. What's up? They will ask you, and you don't want to be on the receiving end of that one. Trust me.
Absolutely. Or you say that your female character has a buzz cut, but then in the next scene, she's playing with her curls. Like, wait a minute. Wait, what is she doing?
And this is where that homework as an author comes in handy. This is where you have to know your characters. And trust me, play to your strengths. If you're a type of author that, like me, doesn't really like research, I'm like, girl, write who you know. You either write what you know or what somebody else knows. I swear by that. Yes. So if I want to get something real genuine, you will see almost in every character that I have, there's a part of me in it. She's going to be tall. She's going to be shapely. She's probably going to have, you know, I cut my hair, but she's probably going to have, like, you know, shoulder length hair. You know, she may have freckles. She may not, but it's like, it's easier for me to write something up, you know, just get that part down so you can concentrate on the other stuff that nobody knows, like a bio 3 level containment center. You know, you just, girl, use your time wisely. That's all I gotta say.
Do you ever feel that if ever your computer is taken, that you are going to have a lot of explaining to do with your search history? I know for me, I am like, one day the FBI is coming for me. I know that they are. I recently wrote a book that was not published. It's not being published under my imprint. Mm-hmm. And one of the characters in there is just a bad dude, and it's the father of my antagonist. But the emotion that I wanted him to have, it required that I do a lot of research on some pretty nasty organizations, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I wanted to get like that thought process behind some of the decisions that they make. And because this character is a whole intergalactic type setting, and he's a creature from another planet, but the mindset that I wanted him to have required that I look into the mindset of individuals that spew some of that same level of venom, right? Okay. Even though it's a very toned down version of it, but I wanted to get in that mindset of like what moves a person to even getting to that level.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh Lord, if they come looking in my search engine, that's it.
My search has all sorts of stuff, literally just things from, you know. And then the thing about like 6 Days to Live, he gets injected with a biotoxin, and the biotoxin was actually used for chemical warfare, whereas they wanted the bad guys that made it wanted to be able to get to people that they needed to get to without any trails leading back to them. So it was something that had to be injected in you, but it was a delayed reaction. So by the time they got where they were going, then they dropped dead. So there's, you know, there's culpable deniability type of stuff going on. So I had to come up with, I made up the names of the chemicals that were used in the biotoxin, because I don't want nobody saying, well, Lisa Dodson created this biotoxin and it, somebody else decided they were going to create it by reading her book. No, thank you. I will not.
Not on my watch.
Not on my watch. So I actually came up with chemical names. And you should have seen them, girl. One of them is my grandmother's name backwards, like Corona. It's like Adderock or something. It's just like, and this is where you don't want to fall down those rabbit holes, because you want to plot out as much as you can, but, you know, so that you're not stopping in the middle of writing, trying to go down a rabbit hole of internet, trying to look for something. And then 6 hours later, you watching cat videos.
Yes.
So, you know, you really got to try to get all that stuff down on paper so that you don't do like me at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to look for a cipher text for, you know, how to do a cipher for biocontainment unit. It's all sorts of stuff. But yeah, girl, preparation is everything. Everything.
Isn't that though the beauty of it is that you know that when you hit those last two words that you're spent, like there's nothing. What's that saying that the kids are saying? You ate that and left no crumbs, chef. Like,
you see, I'm old. I have not heard that one yet. I talk to my 24 and 26 year old and go, hey, y'all ever heard it? I'm like, yes, mom, we've all heard it. Yes. You know, that type of thing. I keep dating myself.
Yeah, oh, girl. Oh, me too. Listen. I tell you, we won't even go down. That's a rabbit hole we won't go down. It's talking about some of these phraseologies and things.
I can't even.
No. But that's the beauty, though, of knowing when you submit that work, that you put in that work. And, you know, anything that comes back, you can receive it as, you know, thoughts of improvement or ways to improve or perhaps a different way of saying something, but you don't have that feeling that you could have done more. You know, there's always something different that we as authors could have done. There's always someone, especially in that traditional publishing arena, mm-hmm. that someone that's holding the purse strings will say, no, we don't want this, or we don't like this, or this is the way that we want it written. And so when you enter into those spaces, that's par for the course. You know that, but you don't have to internalize it to make it personal. It's strictly about preference.
One of the little nuggets of information and little nuggets of encouragement that I give authors, like, you know, you pay it forward and you try to relay anything that you've learned. At least I do. I like to be able to relay stuff that I've learned, you know, through the years, because, you know, I've been writing since early 2000s. And so one of the things as an author you have to do, I mean, you really have to do, and you people say it, but you really have to do it, is you have to develop a thick skin. You cannot take everything personal. Everyone understands it's your baby. You birthed this baby. But if you're going to be in the traditional realm publishing, sometimes you have to, you know, add stuff. Sometimes you have to delete stuff. Yep. Sometimes maybe your characters just aren't connecting with your editors. Yep. And you have to pick your battles, yes. Right? And so you can't fall on your sword for every single thing.
Yes.
You will not be published long if that's the kind of, you know, the way you do it. And so you really have to develop a thick skin. Does anybody like getting like 400 pages back with red lines on every page? Absolutely not. No. But the way I look at it is, it's that editor's job to make sure that my book is the best it can be. It's believable. People, yes, are going to want to buy it, invest in me just by my name alone. Like, okay, if I see Lisa Dawson, all right, I know I'm going to get a good story. But it takes a lot out of you. And trust me, I get it, because nobody wants to be editing stuff. And trust me, they're like, I give myself moments. So like when the editor comes back to me and she goes, okay, this whole chapter is not really needed. And I go, okay, but there's some good dialogue in there, you know, but you got to suck it up. Your job is to get that story right so they can sell it.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I give myself a moment to go, and then I just cut and paste and just drop, you know, I just drop that. I've dropped chapters, yeah, and I mean chapters,
yeah,
into just another file, and I call it dialogue, and I save it for maybe, you know, something else. But you have to be able to take a hatchet, to yes. your baby when yeah. you need to, and not be, you know, fighting tooth and nail with your editor over, well, I want this to stay in because that's the way I wrote it the first time and it don't need to change. Yeah, you ain't gonna have a contract long, trust me. So be open, be mindful that it's the editor's job to do the best she can or he can by you and to make sure that your story is solid and it's going to get great reviews and people are going to love it. And so in order to do that, you kind of have to, you know, take the bloom off the rose sometimes and just realize that you have a job to do as an author. They have a job to do as an editor in a publishing company. And you want to be on the same page with the people that are trying to get your book published.
Absolutely. And you know, that's the tempo if you're traditionally published as well as if you're independently published under your own imprint. I remember that I wrote this book that I was so proud of. I don't write in rhyme. Even when I wrote poetry, I didn't write in rhyme. And I was so proud of this book because it just came out in rhyme and I was just so elated. And even though I'm published under my imprint for the most part. And I have a friend who is a traditionally published author and she has sold millions of copies of her children's books and mm-hmm. they are sold all over the world. And so I just kind of positioned myself under her wing before she knew it. I was there. Like, she just turned around and was like, whoa, where'd you come from? And I'm like, yo, I've been here for about 2 years. You just didn't know it. And so wow. I sent her this manuscript that I was so proud of, right? And she sent it back and she just, in big letters across the top, she said, shred this sugar honey iced tea. And my husband saw it. He said, what are you going to do? And I went to my computer and I hit delete. He was like, why would you delete something that you love that other people said was good, that he thought was good? And I said, no offense to you or other people. You or other people aren't experts in this business.
Right. Wow. Yep.
What part of her selling millions of copies of her
book? Right. That's what I was thinking when you were saying that. And people were like, it's wonderful. Yeah, but she sold millions. So I'm gonna kind of listen to her as opposed to, you know, Aunt Becky down the street.
Listen, delete. And I worked on it again. She said wow. the same thing. I deleted. I worked on it again. Delete. And I said, you know what? Let me step away from the story because I know what I want to say. But apparently what I want to say and what I'm doing aren't meeting.
Yeah.
And so I stepped away from the story for about 6 months. And one day, just out the blue, the story came to me. And it is one of my most requested books, and that's my Manny and Tutu. And okay. so had she not cared about me as a creative, she could have easily, like, we could not be any more different. Mm-hmm. Different ages, different ethnicities. We do share the same genre, but religion different, politics different, income. Different. When I say yeah. everything different, but what we have in common is the love for children's literature mm-hmm. that binds us, right? And it was in that she loved me enough as a creative to not let me publish anything that would not be its best. And she wow. loved my story enough to make sure that it didn't get published with anything other than its best. And so I know what it's like. In You know, I've had some manuscripts come back looking like CSI crime scene. So, you can't even cry.
You can't. You just like, I need a minute. Let me go watch Netflix for a minute. Let me get some ice cream.
You watch Netflix and I just say,
see, Tito. You sit on your adult beverage and yes. Yes. I have a proposal like that right now where it's just my agent is just like, I'm not connecting with these characters. And I'm thinking, it's kind of like when you're an author and you get a critique buddy and you get a friend and you go, isn't this, you think it's awesome. You think it's great. And they looking at it like, no. You're like, what? But you try to explain this stuff, and it's just like,
then you want to justify it. Right. You just didn't read it right. You just didn't understand the nuances. Let me send you the character Bible. Maybe if you understand their backstory a little bit better, then you can have some better understanding.
And they're like, no. And so it's just like, I saw it, and it's just like, I haven't circled back around to it yet, because I'm just like, I can't right now, because I think I'm doing good. I'm like, I wrote my little proposal, my little 3 chapters. It's awesome. It's wonderful. I'm digging these characters. She's like, they're just not connecting for me. Something's missing. I'm just like, yeah, okay. I'm going to put that off to the side. Now, let me ask you
this. Being an indie publisher, what systems are in place for you not to just say, bump it, I'm just going to publish it under my imprint?
Cause I ain't crazy. So let me put my indie hat on for a second. Let me take off the traditional publisher hat, put on the indie hat. So the indie hat is basically all roads lead back to you as an author, right? So you have way more creative input. Yes. You can do whatever book cover you want and whatever storyline you want and all sorts of stuff. But at the same token, now everything is on you to make sure that this story is the best story it could be. And you're footing the bill for that. Yes. So it is incumbent upon authors, especially indie authors, to not only just do the work, but now you also have to make this story the best it can be. Yes. And one of those sage pieces of advice I always give is, you better edit up. You have got to get your story edited by a professional.
Wait a minute. You mean my second grade teacher?
No, because I was about to say that. Not your English teacher around the corner. Not your cousin's friend's nephew's father's uncle's sister's wife who happens to, have an English degree, because you're editing it for different things, not just grammatical. You need a editor that is a literary yes. editor, and one that is ideally, because you've got to get a proofreader. You got to pay for that. You've got to get like
your beta readers.
Yes. You got to pay for that. You have to get it professionally edited yes. because they're looking for different things than, say, for instance, a grammatical Correct. Regular copy Correct. Editor would do. And so that's one thing you can't splinch on. You gotta put the effort in. You gotta put the money behind it, because that's your name going out there. Yeah. And trust me, the days back in the days in the early 2000s where you can just slap anything together and get it out there and get your name out there, and you can have those book covers that look all crazy glossy. You know the ones yep. where you're like, okay. Or you got like hard returns in the middle of your book
yep.
and misspellings and all of that stuff is yes. over. You yeah. have got to put in the work. You've got to put in the money. And, that's a little bit different than a traditional publisher, because a traditional publisher, you get an editor. You yes. don't have to pay for anything. You have an editor. They've got proofreaders. They do. Has got an art department. Voila. They've done your book cover. Whether you like it or not, you got a book cover, and you, while you don't get a lot of creative input, I think it depends, because, if you're up there selling millions of Right. books and got movie deals and all this stuff like that, I'm absolutely sure you're going to get a Yes. little bit more input than, say, for instance, little old me, that just has, 19 books in, but there's going to be different levels.
Yes.
But yeah, you do have, there's a lot of difference between indie publishing and traditional publishing. But what's the same is the work you put in Right. on the back end to make sure it's a solid book, and the investment that you put in, whether it's time, money, whatever.
Yeah.
You have to put that work in to make sure that you're producing a great product.
Absolutely. And when people ask, again, being an indie under my imprint, when people ask, when, you know, I'm in circles where people are selling, I'm in one group online where one of the creators of the group, he posts every month, he posts his earnings. And then at the end of the year, he does this cool little graph where he shows how much he earned, right, for the whole year. Mm-hmm. His earnings for 2023 before Christmas sales, and these are children's books, was $2.3 million as an indie author under his imprint.
Hold on a second.
And he gives you, I know you want to
walk. My heart just fluttered.
Would you like a sip?
I got to turn on my fan, y'all. Hold on a second. Turn on a
fan. Yes. And so when you're in circles like that, your 200,000 units sold is like nothing. Like, I'm really proud that, you know, my sales are at those figures, but then I'm in these circles where that's a drop in a bucket, and I stay in those circles because that's what motivates me.
That is Gary say. That's the circle you want to be in. That is the circle you want to be in. It's one of the things I tell my kids: you don't be the smartest person in your clique. It's not they're learning. Yep. You're not learning. You're not growing. You need that. You need to see that it's attainable,
yes,
and you can reach that. So yeah, you absolutely, I need to find a group. Listen. Where folks are selling like millions so I can sit Indy. And go, how do I get there? That. What do I need to do to get me to that level? Yes. And I think that is great. You're right where you need to be.
Listen,
because I'd be looking at that and I'm like, oh, I got lunch money for the month. And somebody is like, oh, look, I can buy a jet now.
Yeah. And on that, I think that's Lisa, where are the listeners able to follow you? Where can they connect?
Sorry, y'all. I got sidetracked. She starts saying 2.3 million of my whole.
Before Christmas. I know you broke out the fan.
I broke out the fan. I got hot flashes going. Let me calm myself. Woo, child. So what was the question?
Where are the listeners able to follow you?
You all can follow me at lisadotsonbooks.com. I'm on social media under Lisa Y. Dotson, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, or X.
Okay.
Lisa Y. Dotson. And yeah, definitely. Nice.
The fan is the fan. Going.
The fan, y'all. It's the fan.
So for those who are listening, that hum and buzz, even though she's a spicy writer, I promise you, it is a portable fan.
It is just a fan. My daughter gave it to me for Christmas because, y'all, I'm of that age now where occasionally I start sweating for no apparent reason.
Yes, you have personal summers.
Yeah, them personal summers ain't no joke. And so she got this fan for me, and I love my little fan. And, yes, it goes everywhere with me. If I'm in a room, she's like, where's your fan? I'm like, oh, yeah, got to get the fan. Because you never know.
You never know if those summers are going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
So really quickly, I know our time is, listen, I can talk to you for hours, and for those
I know,
who are listening,
seriously, we have to we do know, that.
We know that you guys are just riding on this train with us. It's like, wait a minute, where are we going? We are there. I want to, she's got the light going at the end of the train. So for our,
get on that money train. That's what I want to get on.
Listen, for our rapid fire questions, you are getting the this or that. Okay. Sometimes occasionally some of the, you have to think about them are thrown in, but this is this or that.
And you don't want me thinking about it. I'm just this or that.
Just this or that. So, skydiving or scuba diving?
Scuba diving.
Cable or streaming?
Streaming.
Live theater or movies?
I'm going to say live theater.
Nice. Sunrise yoga or sunset meditation?
Sunset meditation.
Nice. Horseback riding or cycling?
With my hips and knees, I can't get on either one, but I'm going to say horseback riding. Y'all, that's a whole nother beverage and story, so I'll tell y'all that later.
And last one, stilettos or ballet flats?
I'm 6 feet, y'all. I don't need stilettos. And I'm going to say flats. Thank you very much. And they better be comfortable.
Nice. Listen, I have so many more questions, some that we didn't even get to, like the fact that you published a book in 2023 and turned right around at early 2024, released another that's traditionally published. I know that in and of itself was a feat. We're going to have you back on to talk about some of those nuances in terms of how you are maintaining such a hectic writing schedule and still having fun with it. So we're going to have, guys, we're going to have us a part two with the Lisa Dotson interview. And yes, the fan will be there.
The fan's going to be here.
The fan will be there.
I may get another one. You never know.
Yes. Well, thank you
so much.
Might
have to go into a book.
Might have to go into a book. That would be a nice to go up to the door and shut. So I'm going to have your contact information in the in our information. And so thank you again for joining us. Okay.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, and this wraps up another episode of On the Air with Florenza. You may follow me on all social media platforms under Florenza Lee or via my website at florenza.org. Until next time, cheers.